Book 5. The Agony and the Orcstasy. The High Elf narrowed his eyes.
You come in what?
In front of him, the tree-dappled, faintly green sunlight of Elvenholm glinted on 20,000 crudely made but efficient spear points.
Peace, said Mordak.
No, really. Behind the High Elf, 20,000 marshmallow wood bows creaked ominously, objecting to being held at full draw for well in excess of the recommended time limit. He frowned.
You know what? He said. I don't believe you.
Mordak sighed.
You talk to him, he said,
then realized that the space just behind his right shoulder, where Tinituviel should have been, was in fact empty. He felt a tiny twinge of disappointment, which didn't last long. These were, after all, her people. Oh well. He took a deep breath.
We don't want war, he said.
Yes, you do.
No, we don't.
Yes, you do. You're goblins. Mordak conceded the point with a slight gesture.
Yes, all right. But right now, we don't want war, because it'd be bloody stupid. Which is why, he went on patiently, we come in peace.
Directly behind the High Elf, the captain of the archers cleared his throat meaningfully. The High Elf ignored him.
Why should I believe anything you say? He said.
Ah, Mordak thought, dialogue.
Because, he said, if you don't, you have two choices. Either you give the order to shoot and thereby launch an unprovoked attack and start a war, for which you'll get roasted alive in the op-ed columns of every newspaper in Elvenholm. Or you don't give the order. And in about 5 seconds, the fingers of all those archers directly behind you are going to give way under the strain, and future generations of giants will use your back as a hairbrush. The High Elf thought about that for roughly 1 second, then gave the order to stand down. 20,000 archers relaxed their bows and stuck their right hands in their mouths.
Now then, said Mordak. The High Elf was staring. In front of him, 20,000 goblins, no longer directly threatened by an arrow storm, hadn't moved a muscle. Go on, he said.
We come, Mordak said, in peace.
Yes, you said that. Why? Mordak relaxed just a little.
Good question, he said. Basically, we just got thrown out of our home.
The High Elf's eyes widened.
Who by?
None of your beeswax. But there it is. We're now homeless refugees, and we're appealing to you for political asylum and humanitarian aid. And what's more, we're asking you nicely. The High Elf seemed to see a distant mountaintop, wreathed in mist and crowned with snow. The moral high ground, and he wasn't on it.
Why? He repeated. Mordak grinned. Because you lot are probably stupid enough to give it to us. And right now we need food and somewhere to sleep. And what we don't need is a bloody great battle where 3/4 of us get killed along with 3/4 of you. Not right now. Later, maybe. Right now it'd be...
He paused, trying to remember that favourite word of Tinituviel's.
Counterproductive.
Let me get this straight," the High Elf said slowly. "You people are immigrants."
Mordak nodded. And as a wise man once said, immigration is the sincerest form of flattery. He went on to say it's the hallmark of a civilized society that where people live and work shouldn't be dictated by the quirks of geography and the lottery of birth. Nice line, that. Snappy. The High Elf was caught between a smirk and a frown. "What I actually said," he replied, "is where elves live and work. There's a difference."
"No, it was people," Mordak said. "I'm pretty sure of that."
The High Elf snapped his fingers, and a stately elf, all in white, stepped forward, holding a huge book bound in red and green. He opened it and found the place. "Wherever the High Elf goes, the keeper of his press cuttings is never more than a footstep away." "Where elves live and work," the High Elf repeated. "You aren't elves. Now go away." Mordak breathed out through his nose.
"Fair enough," he said. "I wouldn't have fallen for a line like that without a lobotomy. So I guess it was a bit rich to expect you to, even if you are a pointy-eared half-wit. Let's start again."
He stopped. He couldn't think what to say.
"We surrender."
The High Elf stared at him.
"You what?"
"We give in. You win. We are your prisoners, at your mercy. Oh, for crying out loud, don't just stand there looking like a sprig of holly. Do you accept our surrender, or do we have to bash you up a bit first?"
The High Elf opened and closed his mouth a few times, but nothing came out. Then he said, "There's a catch."
"Define catch," Mordak replied.
"Of course, there's the Gluvian Convention on Prisoners' Rights, which you lot are always banging on about, under which you've got to feed us and give us somewhere to sleep and respect our cultural diversity and all that guff. But obviously you know more about that than we do, because you wrote it. So clearly I can't be using it to pull a fast one, since you've seen that coming a mile off. Well, how about it?" The serried ranks of goblins were starting to mutter. Mordak spun round and glared at them, and they immediately fell silent. But the High Elf got the point. Mordak was in control of his horrible tribe for the moment, but moments are transitory.
"Deal," said the High Elf.
"Say again."
"I said, we have a deal. Now, tell your people to throw down their weapons right now."
Mordak gave him a reproachful look.
"Sorry," he said. "I thought you said we had a deal."
"I did. Now, the weapons, on the floor, stat."
Mordak sighed.
"We just talked about that," he said. "Respecting our cultural diversity. It's a fundamental part of goblin culture to be so heavily armed you're in danger of falling over backwards, at all times, no exceptions. It's the rules. But we promise faithfully not to use them. Scout's honour."
The High Elf's head was starting to hurt.
"Look," he said, "this is stupid. Why don't you tell me what you really want, and then we can talk about it like rational creatures."
Mordak beamed at him.
"There now," he said. "I knew we could sort things out once I dragged you down to my level. Let's do that. In peace and quiet. Over there, without all this lot earwigging."
Then Mordak told the High Elf everything. about the eviction notice and the two strange humans with the small box, and the vicar's weapon, and various other things he reckoned the elf had a right to know. And when he'd finished, the elf gazed at him with a horrified expression on his face and said, "You're joking." Mordack sighed. "Oddly enough, no. I'm deadly serious. And unless you want those bastards turning up on your doorstep and throwing you out the same way they did to us, I suggest you think of something. Quickly." "Yes, of course," the elf said gravely. "What?" It had been a long day, and Mordack had been very patient. "I don't bloody well know, do I? You're the intellectual, you tell me." The elf thought for a very long time. "We're screwed," he said. Mordack looked at him. "That's it?"
"I think so."
"Truly is it said, go not to the elves for answers, since they're about as much use as a custard wall." "Oh, well. Thanks ever so much for your time."
"What we need," said the elf, "is someone we can ask."
"Genius. Who?"
The elf thought some more, so hard that the points of his ears started to curl inwards. "A lawyer," he said. "We need a good lawyer."
"That's a start," Mordack conceded. "All right. Who's the very best lawyer in Elvenholm?"
The high elf frowned. "Actually," he said, "that would be me."
"Ah,
sorry."
"No matter. Look," Mordack said, "I know it's a long shot, but if you're the best elf lawyer there is, have you got any lawyers who aren't elves?"
"No, of course not." The elf hesitated. "No, I tell a lie. There's a human. I'm sure I heard someone say there's a law firm that employs a human junior assistant. Name's on the tip of my..."
He sighed and called over the keeper of the book.
"Human lawyer," he said.
"There was one," the keeper replied, "until quite recently. They had to let him go."
"Excuse me," Mordack said. "Do you happen to know why?"
"As I understand it, his work was unsatisfactory," the keeper said. "Nominally, he was dismissed because he failed to reach his quota of billable hours, but I gather the real reason was he approached his work in an unelvish manner. He thought," the keeper added with a shudder, "outside the box."
"Oh, that's a bad thing."
"Of course. Otherwise, why have boxes?"
Mordack nodded. "Find him," he said. "Right now." The filthy bit of old rag that served John the lawyer as an office door was hurled aside, and an elf came in. Because the lintel was low, and elves aren't, he had to stoop a little, which meant he entered John's office ear points first. The dim light of the oil lamp sparkled on them, just for a moment.
"You," said the elf. "Are you the lawyer?"
John looked up.
"Yes."
"You can't spell."
"Actually, I can, but the sign writer can't."
"Then you're a pathetic copy editor. You're coming with me."
John frowned. "Am I?"
"If you know what's good for you, you've been sent for."
Not so very long ago, John would have been on his feet and halfway to the door. But things change, and so do people. Partly, it was the short, glorious time he'd spent not working for elves and being paid real money.
Also, he recently gained a number of insights into how the realms really work, none of which had done much to bolster his opinion of the Elder Race. There was also the fact that, directly behind him, where the elf couldn't see her, was an entity who could bounce any elf off the walls and use his ears as a tin opener, and she was on his side. "Paying work?" The elf glared at him. "I forgot, you're human. Yes, paying work." John smiled. "My rates are 200 elvish floons an hour, plus disbursements." 200 The elf stared at him as though he'd just found half of him in an apple. "Don't be absurd. We could get a real lawyer for that." John's smile didn't even flicker. "And so you shall," he said. "As soon as you give me my 200 floons retainer." "Oh, don't look at me like that. I really don't need to see what the back of your throat looks like. Payment on account. It's standard elvish business practice." "Yes, but you're not..." "Look," John said, "what's the real difference between you and me, leaving aside manners and personal charm? You're immortal. I'm not. And if it's all the same to you, I'd like to spend what's left of my mayfly existence earning money. So either pay up or shove off. I don't mind which. One would be nice. The other one would be even nicer. Just make your mind up, please." 200 floons? "That's right. Who says really, really old people have bad memories?" The elf ground his teeth. "Would you take a check? Only I haven't." "Of course. I trust people. Even your lot." He took the scrap of parchment from the elf's long, elegant fingers, scanned it, and handed it back. "Who'd have thought it? You forgot the signature." "That's better. Thank you. Now, you said something about a job you wanted doing?" The elf stormed out. John rose to follow him, then looked back. "Coming?" "Me?" said the wraith. "If you're not too busy or anything. Only I don't trust that lot further than I can sneeze them out of a blocked nostril, and it'd be handy to have some, well, muscle, in case things get fraught." "Me?" "Yes, you. A wraith. The nameless terror against which even the mightiest elven hero fears to stand. No offence," he added quickly. "None taken." "Do you think all this has got something to do with the somewhere else place?" John shrugged. "Must have, or else why would they want me?" She got up. "Elves have newspapers, don't they?" "Oh, yes," John said. "And magazines?" "Those too. Last time I looked, there were slightly more elvish magazines than elves." "Splendid. In that case, there's bound to be modelling work. If only I could get to meet some editors." John pursed his lips. "Have you ever seen an elf paper?" "No, we weren't supposed to." "No pictures," John said. "Just lots and lots of long words meaning inferior. Definitely no models." "Oh." The wraith looked desperately sad for a moment, then brightened up. "In that case, things are going to have to change, aren't they? I'll just have to make them see that they'll sell a lot more papers if they've got pictures of me wearing nice clothes in them." "Come on," she added briskly. "Don't just stand there.
We've got networking to do.
John thought. I could explain, assuming she'd let me get a word in edgeways, but then she'll be depressed and sad, and there's enough unhappiness in the world as it is. Or I could just stand back and watch while she gets really mad at some needlier jerk of an editor, and then sue him for discrimination. Which won't work, of course, but I bet she'll like me for trying. Somehow a grin had crept onto his face. He wiped it off, but he could feel the afterglow spreading through him. I love my job, he thought, and ran after her.